What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you to yet another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the Bat, at C70 on Twitter. And rejoining me this week is Mr. Medlock, Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily, a Medlock One, and we're glad to have him back in the co-host chair, even though Kyle Reitz did he was tolerable. But he did fine. And we've also got, as we promised last week, we've got Zach Gifford from Birds on the Black. You know him on Twitter as ZJ Gifford, on the Twitters. And Zach, we're glad to have you here, and we're promise not to barrage you with a ton of statistical, information that you have to go dig up, at the fingertips, cause, you know, you can just make it up. We won't know any different.
That's what I try to do during the games anyway, so I'm probably pretty well prepared for it. Glad to be on here with you guys.
Let's start off with just a little bit of, I don't know, how you got into the sabermetrics, what you find so interesting about them, and then, you know, maybe some misconceptions that people like Alan and I, who don't, you know, who appreciate them but don't necessarily study them, might have about them.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, when I started writing over, so I started writing first at Redbird Rants over on Fansided, I think early on I was kind of learning a lot of things, and I think the more I learned about sort of the kind of player valuation, sort of trying to, get to, I'm very much kind of a, almost like a dollar per, you know, war person for players. Like each player, there's some point estimate worth of what they are over a full season or something like that. And kind of the more I got into that, kind of the way my mind thinks with the, you know, the math and, even my job is, you know, I'm in Excel all the time, so this kind of fits well. It just kind of led me towards that sort of way, trying to get into the detail, get into kind of the sort of, I don't want to say nitpicking, but get, you know, really granular, as granular as I could on some things to try to sort of see, you know, at a holistic level, what are players worth, what are they worth relative to each other, and kind of what are the statistics that we can use to, like, best judge their talent level? I think, you know, you talked about misconceptions. I do this all the time, but we talk about things like, FIP, fielding independent pitching. It's an ERA estimator, essentially, that focuses on, you know, walks, strikeouts, and home runs. Mm-hmm. One of the things we fall into is describing something like that as predictive of ERA. And like it is more predictive of ERA than like using ERA itself, and so like that's why it's a better stat. But really what it's doing is it's just describing a player's talent level better. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like inherent about FIP that makes it, you know, predictive. Like it's still describing things that happened. You have to strike guys out, you have to avoid walks, you have to avoid giving up home runs. It's just that since it's a better judge of a player's talent over a given period, it's a better indicator of how that player is going to do in the future. And so I think the way I like to think about, you know, a lot of the stats and a lot of the ways I look at players are, you know, you're trying to predict the future. And so you just want to use the best information you can to predict the future. Whether that's even setting a lineup, what's going to score the most runs that day, or what's going to give you the best chance to score the most runs that day, long term, you know, over a season, over two seasons, what's going to give you the best chance to win the most games, score the most runs, give up the least runs. So it's sort of, the way I think about it is very much like future focused as opposed to sort of describing what happened, but obviously we have to use what happened to inform those decisions.
Well, and it's also, I guess, a good way to, well, I mean, it, I guess it's kind of the same thing, but you're getting that value on the player like you're talking about, where, you know, so often we say this player's good or this player's not good, but using those stats, it's a little bit easier to, you know, get accurate judgments, I guess, that whether a player, you know, just maybe struggling, you know, with it, it's like ERA's way out of line or something like that, where you see the underlying stats and say, no, this guy's still pretty good.
Yeah, you see a lot of things where over, I mean, even a single season in like the grand scheme of baseball is a pretty small sample size, and you get guys that things just don't go their way for entire seasons. Mm-hmm. And so I think even now, you know, using some of the advanced stats, we can get caught up in different things. You know, we can get caught up saying, you know, a guy's BABIP is low, like maybe he's going to bounce back, like Carpenter, for example. You know, maybe it's normal, maybe it's normal variance, maybe it's something different. I think we've gotten a lot better at, you know, not judging pitchers by wins and losses and not judging relievers by saves. I think, you know, that's kind of a lot, everybody kind of knows there's a lot better things to look at now, but there's still, in pretty much everything, there's a ton of variance, and so you have to, I think, Pegasus on Viva Alberto's, when he, you know, his last post, he mentioned that, you know, what we're doing now is you're just trying to use better information to form your opinions. There's still opinions that, you know, 90% of the time are going to be wrong. It's just we're using new information. Hopefully it's better information, but there's still a place for everything. I see a lot of people deeper into sabermetrics as I am that want to discredit a lot of the traditional stats, and, you know, everything still has its place. Like, batting average is something that gets a lot of crap nowadays. Batting average still has its place. You know, if I'm setting a lineup and I know I'm putting a guy in a position where he's going to have a guy on second, it's not going to help me if he walks. Or it's not going to help me as much if he walks as if he gets a base hit. And so that's, you know, again, Carpenter, that was my problem when we hit him third, is most of his value comes from walking. Or not most of it, but a lot of it comes from walking. And that's a lot better suited to be in a place where there's nobody on base than when there's going to be somebody on base. And so, I don't know. Everything has its place. I think that's sort of something that we lose sight of as we start looking at, WOBA or OPS or, you know, expected WOBA. And we kind of lose sight of, you know, batting average does tell us something. RBIs tell us, they don't tell us a lot, but they still tell us something. Like, everything kind of has its use and has its place. It's just trying to find out the best ways to kind of combine that information and kind of see what it's telling you.
You've been, I don't know if you feel like you're, you know, we look at Joe Schwarz a lot of times as the pitching guy. I don't know if you have necessarily a niche that you think you fill into, but we've seen you this year talk about Matt Carpenter, and then to see him come around. We saw you solve Marcell Ozuna, and then you wrote about Tommy Pham, and it seems like he started hitting. So obviously you can just fix the offense, and I don't know why you're not writing articles every single day about every single player.
Yeah, I think, you know, since I started getting into the StatCast data more, which a big credit to Joe on that, back when I was, I was really early. I was talking to him about something, and he just kind of told me to go find something in the StatCast search for myself instead of kind of, telling me what I wanted to hear. Is basically, I was probably annoying him at that point, so he basically just told me to go figure it out. And then once I got into that, you know, it was a couple months later, I'm looking at, you know, really advanced stuff with that data. And I think that data is tailored a lot better to analyzing hitters than pitchers. You know, the most important data we get from that for hitters, you have exit velocity, speed off the bat, launch angle, so trajectory off the bat, and then you can get the kind of location of the ball, and you can infer some things based on that too. And so I just, using that data, that was just kind of what it all fit hitting analysis a lot better than pitching analysis. And I think I like when I can do pitching analysis. I might like that a little bit more, but it seems like there's a lot more pieces I have to fit together. Like pitching is a lot more of an art, in my opinion, than hitting. Hitting, I kind of look at it, you can control your contact quality and you can control the pitches you swing at. A similar process for everybody. Mechanically, there's things differently. And there's things that, some guys, like kick torque, some guys don't. There's no one answer to anything. But I have a pretty good way of kind of going about analyzing, looking at a hitter and trying to identify, what he's doing well, what he's not doing well, and kind of trying to build up that. Whereas pitchers, I think I could still do it well, but I don't do it nearly as often. And also, Joe's really great at that, and I don't want to step on his toes too much.
Yeah, but Joe's big time now. He's behind the paywall, so you got to appeal to the masses. And
I got sucked in, so I am behind that paywall now.
Yeah. Well, I think all of us are, but it's the principle of the thing there. So, okay. Well, Alan, I know you're still there because you've got to be, and I haven't. But if you got anything for Zachary, you want to just move on to what this week looks like.
Let's look on. Oh, let's move on.
Okay. Well, what did this week look like for you? The Cardinals are looking at a loss tonight. Obviously, they're down 10 runs in the seventh to the Cubs as they start this stretch of 4 or 5 games, I guess, that against teams that are in basically first or second place in their division. They just went 4-5 against last place teams. What do you think about where this team stands as, often that traditional Flag Day marker? Well, that was yesterday. So this seems to be the team we've got.
Yeah, yesterday was the first day that I'd actually checked the stats. I knew that they were, I knew what the record was, but I didn't really know what anybody else's was. So I looked at it and thought, 6 games over after playing terrible isn't, it's better than better than could be expected with the circumstances, but still teetering around the same that we've seen the last, 3-plus years. And it's frustrating. And I understand that we're being sold that some of the players that they're going to get healthy are going to turn things around. I don't feel that confidently, especially with a hand injury out of DeYoung. The bullpen's a mess. I heard earlier this week, they're always going to say that they are going to go look for inside solutions and stuff like that. But I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to have to go do something. But I'm in order for this team to improve, I think there's going to have to be help from the outside. I think you're probably going to see bullpen first. And I think there may need to be another bat just to kind of disrupt things as they are. Seems pretty stagnant. Like I said before, it seems like they're just marching in mud a little bit. And, it's just kind of frustrating. I had a lot of hopes going into the first of the month. I thought that these were 4 winnable series heading into this Chicago series. And, they break even. And, it's just not real promising. And like Zach said before the show, the pitching may be coming down to earth. So it's a pretty frustrating time.
Yeah. I mean, as you're right, Zach mentioned it, and it's something we've talked about somewhat too, is this, we had a lot of good pitching. But then you start to wonder, is that the level that they're going to be at, or is that them pitching a bit over their head? And we don't really know with some of these guys. I mean, we've seen, Michael Walker struggle tonight. He's been very good, but we know that Walker does tend to have his blips and stuff. And some of the others are kind of iffy. So, Zach, what are you seeing?
Yeah, like Alan just hit on at the end, I think the pitching going into the season was probably our main concern, at least the rotation depth. I'm just worried that we've seen the best stretches that some of those guys are going to have all season. I don't think Miles Mikolas is going to keep pitching like a number one or a number two. I don't think Flaherty's going to keep up. I don't know what his ERA is right now, but I think he's going to regress a little bit. I don't think he's quite at the level where we can kind of expect 5-6 quality innings from him every time out. Luke Weaver's, you know, starting to look more like a two-pitch guy that struggles to get through lineups. Michael Wacha, he has stretches every year where he looks great, and then by the end of the year he looks, you know, like a number four or number five guy, and a lot of that might be health related. I don't know. So I'm worried about the pitching. I think the offense does end up coming around, which is kind of gonna kind of balance that out. But, you know, then you're still talking about an 83 to 86 win team, and that's probably not going to be enough the way some of these other, you know, teams in the NL got started. And I was kind of worried about this last year too. Looking back, it seemed like we got possibly career years out of Tommy Pham. I was thinking Paul DeJong, maybe now with the injury that might be more true than, you know, he started out well this year, but mm-hmm. that's sort of, we don't know how he's going to come back from that. We saw that ruin Aledmys Diaz, a similar hand injury. Even Colton Wong, like last year was probably the best year he's going to have at the plate. And we still, you know, he had three kind of role players or three guys you didn't expect to even really be contributors just, you know, go off, and you still only won 83 games. I think that kind of concerned me more than what I normally would have been, because I think there was a lot of things that went well last year, but then just tough to see three guys contribute the way they did, where going into the season you didn't expect a lot of value coming from them, and then to still end up outside the playoffs and not even really that close. I'm kind of worrying we're going to see the same thing this year from the pitching side. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it ever comes together.
Yeah, you know, we've had that conversation much where they never fire on all cylinders. You know, when something's going right, something else is going down the drain.
And I mean, you've seen it even the last like 3 days with Harrison Bader. Like, he's a great defensive outfielder. He's hitting a lot better than I expected. He's gotten picked off twice in the last 3 games.
Yeah. I know. I made the comment. I saw him fall after he took off, but I said, you know, Wacha deserved to be safe because Russell kind of didn't play that very hard. Bader deserved to be out because it was stupid. You know what I mean? On that play when they go to the replay. Yeah, and just like, you know, I understand he fell and then take off. I go, but man, this team just can't do that.
Yeah, and I was watching it, and a lot of times when you see guys kind of slip, they sort of start to scramble back before they even, you know, he kind of turned it into a secondary lead almost instead of, but you see that sometimes, you know, if a guy doesn't get a good jump, he just turns it into a secondary lead. But I think you got to know with Contreras behind the plate, he's going to see that, you know, he throws. I think that's a situation where, yeah, you got to be worried about what happens if Pham puts a ball on the ground. Like, can you get the second? But, you know, if it's a single, you're going to be at second anyways. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe a better, if he's thinking a little harder about, you know, who's behind the plate, maybe starts to scramble back a little earlier. I don't know. It's tough to be too mad because he slipped, but it just like we said, things just, you can't get all three parts of the game going right.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, and we've always want them to steal off of John Lester as much as they can too. So I think, you know, that may have played into some of the idea of trying to go on him, but yeah, you're right. Nothing seems to click the way it wants to. And speaking of not clicking, something else that we saw this week as we continue to talk a little bit about the pitching is the fact that Carlos Martinez still is struggling, at least with his control. He walked, what, 7 batters this last game, gave up 5 runs. Couple that with the 4 or 5 that he walked in his first outing. Zach, are you seeing, is it just rust? Is it just trying to get back, or is there something, is he still kind of have that injury in mind?
It's probably a little bit of both, right? Like, he's still rehabbing a little bit. Kind of one thing I look at with pitcher velocity issues is, can they, when they need to, can they still ramp it back up? So, you know, maybe their average fastball velocity is down because they're, you know, a little reserved or they're holding back a little bit. But when they need to throw hard, can they still throw hard? And Martinez hasn't had that problem. So like in, you know, when he came back, or I guess his last start, he hit 98 on his four seamer. He hit 97 with his sinker. I think both of those were like his second fastest, you know, of each pitch type, like a second fastest of the year, maybe even highest for the sinker. So like the velocity is still there. It's just a matter of kind of getting the confidence that he's healthy enough to be, to kind of do it every pitch or the way he wants to do it. I think he's probably a little concerned. He saw Reyes suffer another injury, you know, trying to come back. That's probably in his mind a little bit. I think also, you know, it's just pitching's a tough job. Like he's not more inconsistent than, you know, his other top 30 starters, mm-hmm. but he's not a guy like Kluber that's going to go out and shut guys down every single game. So he's going to sprinkle in bad starts. Coming off an injury, I think, you know, he only had one rehab start. It's probably a little bit of rust and then a little bit of not really trusting his health, maybe. That's my guess.
And I guess we'll find out tomorrow a little bit more if he can come out and be a little bit more dominant against the Cubs, and maybe we can put that all to bed. So, yeah, I don't – you look at this, and we haven't even touched on the bullpen and how messed up that is. And maybe let's talk a little bit about that. And Zach, you had a pretty interesting tweet about how this apparently is a new right for Mike Matheny to bring up pitchers and let them sit around for 2 or 3 days and then send them back to the minors without ever actually making their debut. Austin Gomber did that earlier in the year. Daniel Ponce de Leon goes back down today when Matt Bowman is ready to go and did not get into a game. Maybe just in general, how's this bullpen usage looking to you?
I thought at the beginning of the year that I liked what they did, where you get a bunch of guys who have been good, kind of throw it at the wall and hope a couple of guys turn out good, you know, turn out with really good seasons. So far, Bud Norris they've hit on Bud Norris. They've hit with Jordan Hicks, but they have not on Cecil, Gregerson, or Holland. And, you know, those are three guys, when healthy, that Matheny really likes to use.
And Dominic Leon, too.
Dominic Leon, yeah. He was okay to start the year, but that nerve issue, I wonder if he's going to be... If I had to put an over-under, like, if you set the over-under, if he ever throws another, like... or has, a good stretch in the majors of, like, more than 5 innings, I would... If you set the, like... you know, over under 50%, I'd take the under. He might be done. I have no medical expertise at all, and I wouldn't pretend to, but anytime I see nerve damage, especially in a guy's throwing arm, I just don't know how you come. That's got to be really tough, really, really hard to come back from. So that might have just been really, really bad luck on our part. But yeah, I liked what they did at the beginning of the year. I thought, you know, if you can just hit on a couple of these guys, you might have a really dominant 7-8-9 trio to end the games, and they just haven't hit on any of them. So usually kind of these things seem to carry through the season, so I don't know that... It's not like Collins going to suddenly find it. I don't think that Diesel's going to suddenly find it again. Maybe next year, like maybe the... do something in the off season, they figure it out, but it seems like these things just kind of carry the season. I don't know. It would be nice if when they brought somebody up, if they tried to throw him. I guess he did it with Phil Matt terribly. But you figure, like, you bring a guy up and it seems like there's, you know, some chance that all of a sudden the guy's a relief ace. Like Kevin Segrist did that. Just like maybe a guy's out of relief.
Yeah, Alan, I mean,
As Zach mentioned, Holland, and we saw him struggle again in Memphis. He's gone to Springfield now to do the rest of his rehab, mainly because they're at home, not necessarily because of a demotion or anything like that. But still, what are your thoughts on him the rest of the year? I mean, I know the default knee-jerk Twitter opinion is, you know, get him out of here, DFA him, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it feels like it's getting closer and closer to where that may actually be what the Cardinals have to do.
Well, yeah, I agree. I don't – when did his 30 days actually start? When they assigned him to Memphis or
– Yeah.
Is that when the rehab started? Well, that's – so. Man, and that's – You know, we're a week in now. I don't know. This is becoming more of a cut your losses deal. Or swallow your losses, I guess you'd have to do in this situation. Especially, I saw that he'd given up a home run tonight. And a lot of times in the rehab starts, I don't put a lot of weight on the results like that. Because you know he's just trying to find the strike zone at any cost at this point. Because that was part of the problem. So I'm sure that he's just trying to gas these guys in the strike zone, and they've seen 1,000 pitches already this year, and those kind of things happen. But he can't get out of trouble, and he's given up a lot of hard contact, not even the balls that are just going out of the park. So, you know, I don't know. It does not look promising, especially with how last year ended. You know, as much as I would love to say, and I agree with you, Zach, completely, I was excited that they were bringing in. I talk about this on the show all the time. I'm a big fan of veteran relievers that just know how to get people out. Like last year, I had the most confidence in Zach Duke toward the end of the season, and he only been back on the roster for about a month after his Tommy John. But he was the only guy that can consistently get guys out, and you knew that he may have been overmatched, but he still knew how to get people out. And I feel like veterans do that all the time. But it's just so, the bullpen is just so fickle and these guys just never last. So I don't know. Back to your question, I don't have a lot of confidence that we'll see Holland again.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we're going to see him get another shot at the big league. I don't think they cut him without at least bringing him up, but you're right. I mean, if he's given up home runs in the minor leagues, he should have enough to get past them. I mean, I get that he's playing it, like you said, he's in the strike zone and stuff like that, but
yeah,
he's not down there. He shouldn't be down there just working on stuff or building up. I mean, he should be realizing that he needs to show something. And so if guys are getting to him at AAA and now at AA, I mean, how can you expect him to do anything at the big league level? I mean, when I watch him, and I've never watched Greg Holland more than just this year, I mean, because he's not been a Cardinal, so I haven't watched him, or at least not much. I mean, I just watch him, and he doesn't look like he's getting anything. He's just not, it just doesn't look right. I mean, just, and I don't say that in a health necessarily issue. I just don't think he looks like he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to fool major league hitters. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Zach, I know we've talked about how he struggled some last year at the end of the year, but that was kind of just like 1 month that he kind of came out of it. Was there really any reason to see this kind of fall coming, or do you think it really is just all injury based?
I don't know that it's, I guess kind of neither. I don't think it's all injury based, and I don't think you ever really see a fall like that coming. He had a bad stretch last year, but he like cut his finger in August, and like his bad stretch pretty much followed that. And so like I could kind of buy that like the finger injury affected him last year, and then he had a couple good appearances to end the year. It's just, you know, with a relief pitcher, there's usually they do one or two things well. And as soon as one of those things go, it can really go. I think, you know, his velocity's down a little bit, but a lot of it, I think, is just that he doesn't know where the ball's going anymore. It's almost like it's like a minor case of the yips almost. He comes out, you know, on the major league mound when he was up the first time, like, probably threw more pitches that bounced in front of the plate or in the left-handed batter's box than I've ever seen. It just seems like it's almost like he he didn't obviously he didn't forget how to throw, but it's sort of along the same lines almost, it seems like to me. It's just strange.
And that kind of leads into the topic that everybody always wants to talk about is, besides the struggles on the field, everybody seems to want somebody's head. This week, a lot of it was on John Mabry, but, you know, obviously everybody has focused on Mike Matheny since he took over, in the winter of 2011. I think ever since then, people have been wanting, to run him out of town. And you wonder, I mean, again, we continue to hear that it was Mike Matheny that kind of pushed and prodded and kind of, I don't want to say forced, but really put some pressure on the front office to get Greg Holland. I mean, is this the kind of thing that comes back and bites them? And is this the kind of thing that the front office says, look, we've done everything we can for you, including to go out and spend $14 million on a guy that apparently can't throw anymore. Your goodwill's up. I mean, Zach, I know I don't think you're necessarily on the, you know, leading the fire Matheny bandwagon. But does this, you know, kind of tip the scale that way?
Maybe a little bit. Like he obviously, one of the things they talked about with, you know, when they fired Derek Lilliquist last year was they wanted kind of more alignment with things the front office was doing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe one of the easiest things too from that would be use your best pitchers in situations where, you know, maybe it doesn't fit the typical roles we see. I think he's gotten slightly better at that. I don't know if he views Hicks or Bud Norris as his best reliever. Probably Hicks at this point. He uses Hicks a lot of times in the 7th, the 8th innings. I know when Bud Norris was the closer, you know, the Blogger Day game we were at, he brought Norris in the 8th inning. He's stretched that probably too far a couple of times. He asked Norris to get, like, at one point, I think it was like 4 of his 5 save opportunities were more than one inning or something like that. It was almost going too far. So I think he's gotten slightly better at that. But, yeah, he wanted Holland because he wanted him to fit a certain role. And we hear sometimes that players like having those roles. But, you know, it kind of, I don't know. It's hard to say Holland was a reach. I don't think he was a reach, and he kind of fell into our lap.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely doesn't help his case that, you know, he took a guy who didn't have a spring training, didn't look good the times he had pitched, and immediately started throwing him in high leverage, and then said, in order to get him right, we need to keep throwing him in high leverage. I mean, it cost us probably 2-3 games, right? And that might matter at the end. It's not nothing.
Right. So, Alan, that kind of tends us to, if they're not going to take care of the manager, you kind of were talking about this too, about needing new voices and needing a shakeup and stuff like that. Does that mean, I mean, because pretty much every other coach is new, or at least in a new position, does that mean John Mabry, whether he deserves it or not, and you know, I think there's arguments on how much a coach matters versus, you know, if coaches didn't matter, they wouldn't have done all this shakeup earlier. But is this kind of the end of the line for John Mabry?
You know what? I agree with you guys in the fact that I have always thought that they were incredibly safe because this was a DeWitt hire. This was a DeWitt pick that Matheny was really safe, and so were the closest confidants he had. I don't know though. I mean, they're now it's getting to the point to where, like, tonight's pretty embarrassing. You know, if you guys are following along, some things have happened that are a little bit promising. Not that they're going to get back into this game, but Pham hit a bomb and Carpenter hit a homer and, you know, stuff like that, which makes it a little more promising that, you know, maybe tomorrow is a different story. But just like I said, there hasn't seemed to be a lot of improvement in 3.5 years. The standings show that there hasn't been that much improvement. And it really seems like this could be teetering on a situation where this could get ugly fast, and they could get out of this stretch of games through June to where they're out of the race already. And of course they're going to hold on to everybody at that point, because there's no reason to trade anybody for that point, because there's nothing to play for now. That being said, there needs some sort of disruption, some sort of shot in the arm. I really thought that maybe Reyes, whenever he came out in Milwaukee, I really thought a decent start and then a dominant start would really click the arrow forward a little bit more for him. And that may be a punch in the gut, you know, how that went down. And I understand that everybody's going to come back and say, wait, that's a starter. That's once every fifth day. But I think that new face, especially the one in Reyes, who was, you know, for years your number one prospect, shows that he's your number one prospect, probably your second best pitcher at the end of the season on a 100-win team, then has the unfortunate elbow injury, but it does happen. Then he fights his way back. He's in great shape. He's done all the things they've asked for. Probably pushes himself a little too hard. You know, we're never probably going to get the true story on that. And I thought him coming back, maybe one of those is like, okay, hey, now we're complete. Now let's go for it. I think that there may be a setback on that. But with all this being said, something's going to have to change. I don't think that's going to be, I'm not so certain it's going to be a coaching change, but that's the low hanging fruit on these deals. You know, just like Zach said before the show, some of these guys that we want traded have no value. Mm-hmm. That you kind of cut your hands off on that. So if you have expectations for the rest of the season to stay in this thing, there may have to be changes, and that may be the most obvious change to make.
It kind of feels that way. I mean, again, I don't know that it's going to make a huge impact on what is going on offensively. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But again, they did this kind of shake up last year, trying to do something, and you can't get rid of all the players. And like I said, some of these players you couldn't get rid of even if you attached money to them. So I don't know. I don't know. It seems I don't want to see John Mayberry fired, just because I'm sure he's a nice guy and all that kind of stuff. But that is the nature of baseball. I mean, and that is one of those things that teams do to show they're serious, whether it's right or not. And so far, I mean,
I catch myself not wanting to talk bad about Mayberry because I loved him as a player.
Mm.
You know, and I know that's the worst way to look at it. But as a fan, that's how some of us look at it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I say the same thing. You know, the players have to perform, but you can't make a lot of change to that roster. You know, so that would seem to be the angle that they may have to go.
Yeah, probably. So, Zach, you got any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The one argument I can really make against Avery is that it seems like they've gotten a lot less aggressive this season at the plate. And it's not one of those things where they're like being selectively aggressive or they've like dramatically improved their plate discipline. It's just they're swinging less. I think the last time I looked was probably a month ago, but I think they went from like top half of the league last year in swing rate to like it's bottom four now, maybe bottom five. But like their plate discipline has improved, so it's not like they're swinging a lot less at pitches out of the zone relative to the amount they're swinging less at pitches in the zone. It's just, you know, if last year they swung 50% of the time, this year they're swinging 45% and they dropped 5% off of both, you know, their zone swings and their chase rate. So it's not like, it wasn't like there was a kind of a big thing in like getting these hitters to be more selective. It's almost like he's just telling them to be more patient, and maybe they're getting into worse counts. Cause I mean, obviously, like, if you can be selectively aggressive as opposed to just swinging, you're better off, but it doesn't seem like they've gotten better at identifying pitches to hit versus pitches to take. It's just they've decided they're going to take an extra five pitches a game.
Yeah, because there was the stats that were out this week. I think Bernie put them out, but I'm not sure. But, you know, and I don't know what they were exactly, but it was basically like the Cardinals are like at the bottom third, or if not farther down, at swinging at pitches at hitters counts 3-1, 2-0, whatever. It's just they're almost automatically taking in those situations instead of trying to, you know, look for a pitch there. They seem to be just waiting. And I think that's, you know, I felt that way about Matt Carpenter quite a bit, especially last year. It felt like he was must have been, I think he may have been a little bit hurt, but, you know, he was, every count went to full count. I mean, he just didn't seem to want to swing until it was at 3-2. And I feel like we see a lot of that, and it would seem like that's a fairly, of course, it's always easy to say, hey, that's, why don't you switch that up when you're sitting over here instead of actually being on the field. But that, I mean, Alan, that seems like that would be an easy way to at least change, you know, see what happens when, you know, you've spent 2 months now waiting on pitches in that, you know, those hitters counts. If you start swinging at those, that's going to, at least for a while, you're going to probably get some good pitches to hit.
Well, here's I feel like it's a good case scenario. Look what Chicago did to Walker tonight. Mm-hmm. They were aggressive from the beginning, and it seems like the Chicago game plan against Cardinals pitching is always right on point. And it's tough to say, but it always is. They're always aggressive early. They weren't going to let Walker get ahead of them and dominate them with that changeup. They were aggressive early in the count, and really, they started from the get-go, you know, scoring runs there in the second. We never see that. We hardly ever see the Cardinals go out and be super aggressive and swing the bats, and it seemed like they had the game-to-game plan like that. I don't know. You can really tell. I've really felt like the Cubs have jumped all over Weaver and never gave him a chance to get anything settled. And they did the same thing with Walker tonight, where they were just ultra aggressive and not letting them get their secondary pitches over, or in Walker's case, the more dominant pitch over. I don't feel like we ever see that. I feel like it's the game plan day in, day out. And it also lends itself to the situation. This just brings to mind. Every post game news conference, every time the mic's in a player's face, everything you hear out of the Cardinals clubhouse is, we'll get them tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just outplayed at this point. I know in a big league season, you can't go hard like that. I mean, you know, we've heard it forever and we've seen it, and you burn out quickly playing every day, but there's no sense of urgency to the team. So I just don't know where that starts though. I don't know if that's leadership in the dugout. I don't know if that's leadership in the clubhouse. And I don't know if it's coaching. But there's obviously a problem.
Well, what's really strange about that is it seemed like back in 2005 that their goal was to win every series. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't that they're, it was like, we'll get them tomorrow. It wasn't, you know, you lose two out of three and it's like, we'll get the next one.
Mm-hmm.
It was, they went out there trying to win every series, and somewhere between 2015 and now, it seems like that mentality's changed. It's, you know, maybe they looked at that season and said, you know, we weren't as good at the end of it as we were in the beginning of the middle, and so maybe that wasn't the right attitude, but I think, like you said, they've taken that too far. You do need to win games. The games in April and May do matter as much as the games in September. And it just seems like they're content to drop two out of three and just chalk it up to baseball being baseball, as opposed to, you know, going out and winning important, you know. We talked about this earlier. They just finished that run against teams in last place. That's a time where you need to win probably two out of every three.
Sure. And I agree with that. And Daniel and I have had this conversation off the air several times via text messages and whatnot, is the Cardinals put themselves into a situation where you almost have to sweep to save a 10-game stretch or whatnot. And teams, are hard to be swept, and the Cardinals are bad at sweeping anybody. You know, it really backs them into the corner, and I think that mindset has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it is different to see that kind of mentality after, you know, Tony La Russa, who – you're right, wanted, was talking win the series, who would look at games over 500, you know, and grind, you know, you gotta get to 5, then you gotta get to 10, then you gotta get to, you know, 20 games over 500, and, you know, it doesn't seem like that's the mindset now, and I don't know that it, I mean, you know, somewhat it hasn't been even, you know, I don't know. The Cardinals obviously went for a guy that could manage people. That was the idea when they got Mike Matheny. And he wouldn't think that Mike, and I'm sure he's not. I mean, I'm sure Mike Matheny is a very competitive guy and all this, but it definitely doesn't look like, of course, nothing, it doesn't ever look like anything bothers Matheny, because nothing, it doesn't look like anything makes Matheny happy either. But you're right, you hear the same things and you don't see changes. You don't see a player not playing the next day because they made a mistake in the outfield, they need to learn from it. Or, you know, Tommy Pham gets picked off a third against the Marlins, you know, and nothing seems to happen there. And, you know, things of that nature. You know, Dexter Fowler dropping a ball in the outfield, and, you know, he's, of course, he doesn't play much now because he's not hitting. There isn't an edge there. And we talked about Tommy Pham bringing that edge last year, hopefully. But it just doesn't seem like it's there. And it feels like they need something. I don't know if it's a John Lackey type trade again to, you know, kick their backsides and say, look, this is, yeah, you can like each other. We want you to like each other, but you also have to play well. Or I don't know. I mean, I really don't know where that impetus is going to come from, and I don't know if it'll make much difference. I mean, I don't think you can get Dexter Fowler fired up enough to hit 300 the rest of the way. I don't know that you can get Colton Wong fired up to hit 300 the rest of the way. I mean, that's just not likely to happen, and, you know, I just don't know what you do about it. It's a kind of a mess.
Yeah, they've definitely painted themselves into a corner. I drank the Kool-Aid and thought they would be decent this year too, so I can't really say too much.
Yeah, I think we all did. Zach, I do, as I mentioned, Fowler, I know you have done, like we said earlier, you've done some deep dives onto a number of the Cardinals hitters. With Wong and Fowler, I think I've seen that you've kind of at least done some just general looking at them. Is there anything in the underlying stats or their hit velocity or anything that gives any kind of hope of some sort of resurgence coming out of these two guys?
I think I haven't really found anything. I know that's not a great way to start this out. Like, Fowler's been unlucky, but even if he was kind of getting his expected results based on that stuff, he'd still be 10% below average, and he can't be a guy that's below average the way he plays defensively. Yeah. he's got to be, you know, 10 to 15% above to even be like an average player. So that's not promising. The kind of what you have to hang your hat on, I think, is that, you know, Wong has been, he's not a great hitter by any means, but he's been consistently like an average hitter for a second baseman, for the last like 4 years or so. And Dexter Fowler has been an above average hitter for a long time. So I think you have to kind of hang your hat on the talent that should be there, and that, like, they aren't really this bad. Like, neither of them is really this bad. I did a player comparison, like, you know, Wong over his last 3.5 months going back to last season is hitting like Pete Cosma did, when he was, you know, the 1 year he was like our shortstop for the whole season for some sad reason. He's not actually that bad. Maybe he lost something, but there's no way that these two guys are as bad as they've been. That said, there's not like a sign that a breakout's coming. Like, Wong's beating like 60% of his balls into the ground. Dexter Fowler's lost, I think, you know, 2 miles per hour off his exit velocity, and he's hitting more fly balls, which, you know, normally I would advocate for hitting more fly balls, but usually when a guy does it, he hits the ball harder. Fowler's hitting it in the air a little more, Andy's hitting it weaker, so you're just getting a lot of flyouts. I sort of wonder with him if maybe the, you know, he had that heel injury last year. I sort of wonder if maybe some of his lower body strength is kind of sapped at this point. Mm. If that's the case, you know, maybe he becomes a passable platoon option. You know, maybe you can work something out with him and Bader, or Fowler plays against righties and Bader plays against lefties, because Bader does have some huge problems with right-handed pitching right now.
Go ahead, Zach.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's just, they're not as bad as they are, but there's not really a sign that there's a breakout coming. Like and there's nothing that, you know, Ozuna, I felt like he sort of flipped a switch. But like Craig Edwards has pointed out, his plate discipline was improving before the switch flipped. So like, I think, you know, the change to his stance helped unlock the power. I think that's what unlocked his power last year and did it again this year. But it wasn't like there was no sign that he was, you know, starting to get less lost. Like, if that makes sense. Like, there was something there for Fowler and for Wong, and even, you know, it's just that they're not in a good place right now. I don't know. Hopefully they figure it out, but it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, only put something out today, though, that I thought was interesting. I didn't realize it was this bad. Fowler doesn't have a single hit this year off of a breaking ball. And then also mentioned that he is one of the lowest, and you would probably know where to find this a lot better than I would. He has one of the lowest contact rates against 95 and up, and maybe even been 94 and up fastballs in the league, that they really think his reaction time has gotten that slow. That really blew me away when he told me about the breaking pitches. It didn't, I don't know. It's funny. It seems like he's just been out of whack. Like most of his hitting's all timing anyway, with a lot of movement. When I heard that, I was thinking, man, that's a lot of the reasons why he's just pounding the dirt on that right side of the infield. And it kind of worried me a little bit. I was like, I don't know if this is very promising at all. So I agree with you. I don't know. You would probably know a lot more about the outlook as far as moving forward. But that was one of those I was thinking, man, this doesn't look very good. But I do, I agree with almost everything you said, and more, mostly that about his feet. I think his legs are probably close to giving out on him at this point. A lot of that, I made the mistake while we were sitting there at the game that afternoon of May, and I've had to wear this. Of a lot of it looks like effort issues. I didn't mean it like trying hard. I meant like he doesn't have the legs to do it. And yeah. I do feel like his feet may have given out on him.
Yeah, like I said, I think that's my biggest concern is, you know, we know he had, it was like bone spurs in his heel or something. I just wonder if that's, you know, if your legs go, the rest of it can go pretty quick.
Sure.
Which then, you know, you look at the fact that there's 3 more years on this contract. And there's really nothing else you can do except, you know, I guess at best you were running him as a bench bat, but that's a pretty expensive bench bat. Not that that should necessarily pay a whole lot of into the decision making, but it will some. And you gotta, I mean, you know, it's possible that he could retire if he really is, you know, physically infirm, but I don't know that he feels, you know, he's not showing that he feels that way. Let's put it that way. I don't know. I think that I don't know what you do there. You're kind of just stuck. It's not a good look. And you know, and fortunately, that's the kind of thing that gets people, you know, front office types reassigned or whatever. And not that I think John Mozeliak is going to lose his job over Dexter Fowler, but it. It puts another dent in that armor that used to be pretty spotless, but mm-hmm. some of those moves that Mo has made as of late has brought his, at least for some people, have brought his reputation quite a bit down. I mean, Zach, is there any salvaging this?
I don't know. I mean, you're looking at over the last couple of off seasons, between Fowler, Holland, and Cecil of about $130 million in bad money, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, you know, with Holland this year, it was kind of, well, what else were you going to do with that $14 million at the time you signed him? There wasn't like a, you know, there wasn't really a second alternative other than sitting on the money and putting it in your pocket. But I, you know, at some point, especially with these guys that are signing the 3-, 4-, 5-year deals, you're limiting your flexibility later on. And that was kind of, that was my problem when they extended Steven Piscotty. That, you know, luckily we found a way to get out of that. Kind of my problem when they extended Yadier Molina at $20 million. Now my problem with, you know, the Fowler signing, I thought they needed to sign Fowler, but I would have much preferred 3 years to 5 years, and you know, 4 would have been a fine compromise. Cecil, you know, we have another 2.5 years of that. It's, just seems like they're getting into a lot of these deals. Even Mike Leake, that's another bad one. We're getting into a lot of these kind of mid-tier deals that you have to go 4 or 5 years and pay $15 to $20 million for a guy who might be average, and if he's, you know, that's not really money well spent, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, at least on the, you know, positive side, if you will, is they're not hurting for money, to put it that way.
They're not, but at the same time, you're gonna eventually. I think we have like the second most payroll committed. We're like second to the Giants payroll committed in 2020, and so you have this free agency class. You're gonna have Kershaw might be a free agent, Machado might be a free agent, Donaldson might be a free agent, just a bunch of, you know, plenty of other guys. And there's gonna be teams that go into that market looking to spend $75 million. Cardinals are probably, you know, they can take on one contract that's $5 million on the payroll balance. So you're just by signing all these kind of, not necessarily handicapping the team, but you're at least limiting the flexibility to look outside or to continue to look outside.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is some opportunity cost there. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the problem, Alan. I mean, we've always talked about that the Cardinals can't tear down. They can't go into a season not wanting to compete because there's a probably large section of the fan base that has grown up with 20 something years of success that's not going to handle that at all or well. And when they've started, you know, budgeting based on $3.4 million, you start going into a season where you know you're not going to compete. That becomes 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, which is still a lot of people in the ballpark, but not what you're expecting. They feel like they're going to get kind of stuck in that, and they probably have been for some time, but it's really starting to catch up to them.
Sure. And, you know, I thought when he made the comment, when Mo made the comment last year that, first of all, the rebuilds work for some teams, but it's a complete tear down. And then in the times that Chicago had done that, he had made it seem like that was the last true team to give that run that had won it after, say, Kansas City, then you go to Chicago. That's the way that I took it. That's how he was lining those up. That the drafts, they put them in place. The draft has changed since then from the player at 1 to player 15 in the draft. There's a lot of talent, not necessarily discrepancy. And, you know, there's a lot of the same, and that makes the rebuild more difficult, which another reason it points to, I don't ever see them doing that. I think we're in the middle of as much of a rebuild as we'll see the Cardinals do. But I agree that they're in a tough situation. I mean, you're going to have to get someone to take a little bit of Jerko money, you know, if he were to go. The Wong contract. Carpenter's not going anywhere, but that's another contract someone would have to take. You know, Fowler can't leave. You look at maybe a FAM type situation. But, you know, he desperately needed another big year to show that he was the player that we thought he was. So yeah, I don't know what the answer is on that. I've said this. They can see how lackadaisical and disinterested this team can look at times. I mean, we're not the only ones that can see this, the fan base, and they're not, so the organization doesn't, they have to see that things aren't turning around either. So I think there's more of a plan in place to develop the pitching than we know. And I think that's a lot of the reason why I just don't see some of those guys moving. Last year I thought it would probably be the last straw, but it seems like it's the exact same results we're getting now. So I don't know if I do believe that this is as close to a true rebuild, like some teams are going to do. This is as close to the Cardinals. We'll get to that. I think they're just going to hold on to the assets that they have. I don't think they'll ever do a true tear down just because of the comments that, you know, 90 wins and 3.4 million fans is what they shoot for every year. And yeah, I mean, you can be a middling team for a long time and do that. I mean, a year like this, I think is going to cost you, more fans. And I think attendance is down across the board right now. There's several factors on that. But to look at it on a team-by-team basis, I'm sure that it'll be down a little bit this year, and it's going to progressively go down until they do make one of those moves to bring in a bunch, which we thought it may be Ozuna, and it ultimately might be. But the sandcastle's falling apart around him too. So it just seems like they're just going to have to restructure in some way without tearing everything down. And I'm just not sure if that's possible, but in St. Louis, they're just going to have to do that.
Harrison Bader ends the game. Cardinals lose 13-5.
Well, let's get on tomorrow.
it is interesting. Again, Bader went 0-for-5 today. And as much as we talk about Dexter Fowler struggling and, you know, part of the reason that everybody would like to see him on the bench is Harrison Bader, he's been struggling a lot of late as well. And I don't know if that's just, you know, Zach, is that trying to adjust to the league? Is that a little bit more pressure on him because he needs to replace a guy that's struggling as badly as Fowler, or some combination of both?
I think part of it's kind of the league adjusting to him, getting a little bit more of a kind of a scouting report. I mean, seeing him in the minors, we knew there's a little bit of a kind of a hit tool issue. You know, would he make enough contact for his power to play? Early on, he did. So, like last year, when he played early on, he played pretty well. Then towards the end of the year, he fell off. This year, you know, over his last 10 games, his WOBA is at 195, and it's, you know, going to be a lot worse after today. So, you know, a 195 WOBA when, like, I think average is about 320. 195 is really bad. Like, even Fowler's probably higher than that over his last 10. I think it's just pitchers are adjusting. He's not that good against righties. Kyle Reese said he thinks lefties are starting to find a way to attack him a little bit differently. And, you know, it's one of those things where there's always a give and take, and right now he's kind of getting that first real punch from major league pitchers, and we'll have to see kind of how he responds to that. Can he adjust and start making more contact again? Okay, I just looked in. He's over the last 10, at least entering tonight, he's, you know, Fowler's down at 176. Whoa, so they're both doing terrible. That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough. Yeah.
I mean, it's like flip a coin to some degree. I mean, I guess at least Bader brings what feels, I mean, it is better defense, although some of that is just, you know, the level he plays and the speed that he plays at. And, you know, he's significantly younger than Fowler as well. But, so I guess that's the tiebreaker, if you will. But
I think Tyler O'Neill hit a couple home runs again for Memphis the other night. So maybe you try to get another run out of him. But, I mean, where he got sent down, he was striking out. It was like almost 50% of the time in his last few games. He was really, really taking a, kind of the same thing that's happening to Bader, you know. Came up, he hit well for a little bit, and then pitcher said, okay, well, now we have we kind of know, look at your swing and we know where your holes are now. And yeah, he struck out, it looks like, 1, 2, 8 games in a row before he went down, and half of those were kind of deal there.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say at one time I looked and he had struck out 11 times in 15 at-bats close to the end there, so it did make you wonder. I mean, the power obviously played, we saw that, but, you know, he's got to hit the ball for it matter, and he wasn't doing that. But, you know, again, maybe he's made some adjustments, and you hope, I mean, again, he's so young, you don't want to draw any conclusions, but, you know, you look at that and you say, well, hopefully he's not a quad A player where he can hit Memphis, tear Memphis up, and not in the big league. That, I think there's still time for him to adjust and get some play there. And, you know, honestly, it's getting to the point with this team that you put somebody out there with potential because the options aren't much better. I mean, even if he's going to strike out a lot, you know, if he actually is going to run into one, that's more than, you know, it's not like Bader or Fowler are doing a whole lot otherwise. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting thought for them as well when they start bringing up these minor leaguers, because, you know, minor leaguers need experience. Minor leaguers are going to struggle at times, and how much are you going to be able to stay with a guy when the rest of the team is kind of scuffling as well? And you know that may, I mean, we saw that with Carson Kelly, right? I mean, Carson Kelly didn't get to play, I mean, partly because he wasn't hitting, but also he didn't get that run because Pena was doing pretty well, and the Cardinals needed something, and Pena was providing it. So Kyle Kelly didn't get a chance to play, but then you start wondering about Kelly's future and things of that nature. I don't know. Like we said earlier, there's not exactly a silver bullet in the minor leagues. It just feels like this is going to have to be something that Mo and Gersh, you know, do, but they're kind of like, I don't know, I'm just recashing by now. We're just kind of running around in circles, which is pretty appropriate for this team, I guess. So let's break out of that. We've gone about our normal time. Zach, is there any topic that we didn't talk about you think we ought to tonight?
I think we covered most kind of what I was thinking about. It's tough. I haven't been able to watch as much this week, so nothing's really jumped out at me. You know, we didn't talk about Jordan Hicks, but a lot of people have done that lately, so kind of there's been plenty of Jordan Hicks content out there the last week, so that's really the only thing that's the only thing that's been exciting over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks with this team. So,
well, and even that with this team doesn't come without its controversy. It's, although right, it's less about Jordan Hicks and about how they're using him. I guess the good thing about a 13-5 game right after an off day is that Jordan Hicks got, well, I guess he's got 3 days now in a row off, so he can pitch the rest of the, you know, for the next week or so, probably.
He could probably go another 80 consecutive.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's good. He doesn't need another day off till the All-Star break, so. Alan, what do you, is there anything you want to hit on before we close it up?
Yeah, no, I think that we'd covered a lot of it. It's tough to be super positive right now. I try to be as positive as I can. My patience is kind of worn thin right now. And I mean, I can't be the only person to see that. So, you know, hopefully that they all prove us wrong and win, you know, 7 out of the next 10 or something like that and make believers out of us. But, you know, we'll just have to take it game by game and see how that goes. I'm just not real positive, and hopefully there's some movement to make the team not so dang boring. That's a lot of my problem. I mean, it's just night in, night out, they're just kind of difficult to watch.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that as well. You know, the Cardinals actually drew walks tonight, three of them, which is, I mean, that was a stat that came out of that Padres series that just blew my mind, that they went three games against a Padres team that, you know, granted, they are playing a little bit better as of late, but and didn't draw a single walk, which is kind of funny after we talk about how, you know, how they're not swinging. Then they were, maybe they were trying to change stuff up there and it just didn't work. I don't know. But anyway, Zach, glad to have you tonight. Appreciate you joining us and come back again.
Definitely. I enjoyed it. And one last plug, Kyle Reese over at Birds on the Black, a wonderful tribute to his father. I would highly, I would say that's a must read mm-hmm. for anybody. I'm sure, you know, people are listening to this. They probably follow him too. But you know, if you haven't seen that, I would definitely look at that. You know, happy Father's Day to both of you guys. I hope you guys, you know, can enjoy the weekend in spite of whatever happens on the field Saturday and Sunday. You know, to everybody listening, you know, and a father figure or a father, happy Father's Day to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Kyle's piece especially, yes. You have to go read this. I knew, you know, it's tough when somebody's dealing with what Kyle's dad is dealing with and having to go through that, but to all that come together and for Kyle to be able to write about it, it's pretty impressive. So yeah, definitely go out and do that. Zach, do you have anything in the hopper for yourself over the next little bit that we should be looking for?
Not yet. This week I spent some time with it's 216 Stitches. He's another blogger. I was doing a lot of data crunching for something that we're rolling out with him. So I guess look for that. It's not Cardinal specific, but it is interesting. Usually when I'm trying to write things, I kind of go through the roster and sort of think if anything stands out to me. And for the last couple of weeks, most of it's been pretty boring. So
we'll see. It's been boring.
You know, try to enjoy this weekend. It's going to be really, really hot up here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then get back Monday, Tuesday, start, you know, see if I find anything again. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully something good happens in the next couple days.
Yeah, maybe we'll get some more walk-off games and you can talk about that or something. I don't know.
Anything.
Yeah, anything. All right. Alan, you doing all right? Anything coming up for you, or are you just you sitting here talking to us?
Yeah, talking and plugging along. Not nothing in the hopper or anything like that. Not researching anything. Just trying to look onto the next month and into the All-Star break and trade deadline and see if anything can happen. And I really feel like we're all kind of walking on thin ice right now.
Yeah. It's again, hopefully something's going to change. But John Mosley like this, Tim does not. At least make a whole lot of player movement at this time of year. It's got to be another month to 5 weeks probably before he gets into that comfort zone. But, I feel like he may have to stretch a little bit.
That's a scary time.
Yeah, but we'll see. All right, well, until next week. And next week, I believe, as we continue this run of guests, I think everybody's feeling sorry for us and trying to, enliven the show a little bit. I don't know. But Moose Michaels from the 2 for 3 podcast is scheduled to join us for that. So we look forward to having him. He's been on before. We'll have him on again, and we'll talk about what hopefully will be a little bit better week of Cardinal baseball, but it'll probably be a very interesting and maybe defining week as the Cardinals play the Cubs and Phillies, and then they'll be playing the Brewers by the time we record next. So there's a lot of good baseball teams that are going to have to see. We'll have to wait and see if there's actually good baseball being played. So until then, for Zach and for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!